GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on today's program, the preliminary Saskatchewan Water Security Agency Spring Outlook is out. We will tell you about the areas of the province that can expect near normal, above normal, or below normal runoff, at least in the preliminary stages. Saskatchewan's agriculture industry has posted a third consecutive year of record agri-food exports. We'll tell you about those numbers. Conservative Party MPs are once again calling for the federal Liberal government to scrap the carbon tax. It came up during question period on Monday. We'll hear the exchange between the Conservative Party agriculture critic John Barlow and Environment and Climate Change Minister Stephen Guilbeault. Also coming up on today's program, the feeder cattle prices were mixed across Saskatchewan this past week. Jace Fossen will join us on that. And the East Central Research Foundation Farm near Yorkton has participated in another study, and it was looking at the efficacy of using struvite to supply the phosphorus needs of canola. All of those stories and much more coming up on today's edition of GX on Agriculture. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. The preliminary Saskatchewan Water Security Agency Spring Outlook shows most of southern Saskatchewan with below normal snowmelt runoff potential. The central areas with above normal snowpack can expect an above normal snowmelt with near normal conditions for the far north. Much of the southern areas of Saskatchewan had very dry conditions throughout last summer and into the fall. The exception is an area just east of Moose Jaw through Weyburn, Indian Head, and Regina, where wetter fall conditions and near-normal snowfall have projected a near-normal snowmelt. Flooding is not expected despite the predicted above-normal runoff in central areas. The report says without additional snowfall, surface water supply issues are likely to occur in southwestern Saskatchewan in 2023. The runoff outlook will be updated next month. Saskatchewan's agriculture industry has posted a third consecutive year of record agri-food exports. The Ministry of Agriculture says the total value of agri-food exports in 2022 reached $18.4 billion. The leading agri-food export commodities last year were canola oil, wheat, canola seed, lentils, durum, and dry peas. The top five international market destinations were the United States, China, Japan, Mexico, and Algeria. Saskatchewan Agriculture Minister David Merritt says the numbers show progress toward the $20 billion agri-food export target in the 2030 growth plan. Saskatchewan's agri-food exports are the second highest in Canada, behind Ontario, which exported $23.8 billion in 2022. Saskatchewan's total exports have grown by more than $20 billion since 2012. Conservative Party MPs are once again calling for the federal Liberal government to scrap the carbon tax. The Canadian Taxpayers Federation says the federal carbon tax is scheduled to increase twice in 2023, from $50 per metric ton to $65 per metric ton on April 1st, and a second carbon tax increase in July could add 13 cents per liter to the price of gasoline. Conservative Party agriculture critic John Barlow brought up the issue Monday during question period.
What is challenging for Canadians, and especially Canadian farmers, is the Liberals tripling their crippling carbon tax, which is fueling the food affordability crisis in Canada. And now the Liberal NDP carbon tax coalition wants to triple that tax. The result of that is a typical Canadian farmer will pay $150,000 a year in carbon taxes alone. What Canadian farmer can absorb those taxes? I'll tell you, none. We are losing farms now due to bankruptcy and insolvency. When will the Prime Minister of Misery understand that his tax has to go so farmers can grow?
Liberal Environment and Climate Change Minister Stephen Guilbeault had this response.
Seems like the party opposite is worried about cost, but never talks about the cost that we are passing on to our kids and grandkids through the impacts of climate change. Billions of dollars that are accumulating year after year. We have an emergency here, Mr. Speaker, and the party opposite is simply not telling the truth to Canadians. We're already paying for the cost of climate change, and we need to find solutions. They have no solutions to offer, Mr. Speaker, none whatsoever.
However, primary producers could receive some carbon tax relief. Bill C-234, which would exempt on-farm grain drying and barn heating from the carbon tax, is at its third reading in the House of Commons. The bill needs to pass its third reading in the House and three readings in the Senate before it can become law. It's time now for the Ag Review portion of our program, and that's a presentation of New Era Ag Technologies in Swan River.
GX94, Ag Review.
Stocks of Canadian grains at year-end appear to be pretty much in line with market expectations. Statistics Canada yesterday issued its report on stocks as of December 31, 2022, which highlighted notable increases in most grains, further signaling a recovery from the 2021 drought. Winnipeg-based independent trader Jerry Clausen says stocks reports are important because they confirm the production numbers for crops like canola. He says for wheat and barley, it confirms production, but it also gives an idea of domestic feed usage for the first 5 months of the crop year. Clausen says there were no big surprises in the stocks report, and as expected, it wasn't a big market mover, deeming the report to be neutral for canola and spring wheat, while somewhat supportive of durum. Statistics Canada yesterday tallied up increases in commercial and on-farm stocks of both lentils and dry peas in its report on grain stocks as of December 31, 2022. Unlike those two pulses, however, StatsCan reported total stocks of chickpeas decreased at 185,000 metric tons in December 2022 compared to 311,000 in December of 2021. That's despite an increase in production from nearly 91,300 metric tons in 2021 to almost 128,000 in 2022. While commercial stocks of chickpeas remained consistent at 25,000 metric tons, the federal agency saw a drop in on-farm stocks from 285,000 metric tons in December of 2021 to 160,000 metric tons in December of 2022. The five-year average is 263,000 metric tons. However, StatsCan does not have a stocks figure for December of 2017. Syngenta Seeds NK conventional soybeans will be sold under a new brand for the 2024 growing season and distributed by two licensees, Hensall Co-op and Jackson Seed Service. The company says the move to a licensing model for its conventional high-protein soybeans will help meet customer and end-use market demand more effectively. Syngenta will continue to breed high-protein soybeans and offer growers NK-traded soybean varieties and corn hybrids sold through the NK dealer network. Syngenta Seeds will unveil the new brand this summer. Dan Wright, the head of Syngenta Seeds, says the new licensing model offers benefits throughout the value chain, including flexibility, stability, and growth opportunities. Nathan Finney of New Brunswick has stepped into the role as the president of the Canadian Cattle Association. This appointment comes after the sudden passing of the previous president in December, Reg Schellenberg. Finney, the first president of the CCA from the Maritimes in 90 years, previously sat in the role as vice president of the organization, and prior to that was very involved in cowboy politics. Finney attended the National Cattlemen's Beef Association Conference in New Orleans last week to continue work on the relationship between the U.S. and Canadian beef industry as the countries continue to become more and more integrated, even though policies can sometimes differ dramatically. One of the big sticking points right now between the Canada and U.S. negotiations is new regulations in Canada on electronic logs for drivers in a time where finding drivers to haul cattle is becoming increasingly difficult. There are heightened fears about foreign entities owning land in the United States after the Chinese balloon's voyage over American skies last week.
Should we roll out the welcome mat or shut the door to a possible threat? In Congress and state houses, the Chinese balloon's journey across the U.S. added traction to concerns about foreign land ownership. Senator John Tester, a Montana Democrat, is sponsoring legislation to include agriculture as a factor in national security decisions allowing foreign real estate investments. In his words, "We don't want folks from China owning our farmland. It goes against food security and it goes against national security." At least 11 state legislatures are considering measures to address the concern. That includes Montana and North Dakota, where the U.S. Air Force recently warned that a corn mill proposed near a military base by a Chinese company's American subsidiary would risk national security. I'm Rita Foley.
And hundreds of farmers drove their tractors through Paris today in protest of banned pesticides. The convoy entered the French capital through a southern gateway and made its way to the gold-domed Invalides monument, the site of Napoleon's tomb. They're protesting the French government's decision last month to ban the use of pesticides on sugar beets and other crops. The choice of Napoleon's monument as the site of their protest was significant, as he imported sugar beets from Poland to ensure France's sugar independence. And that's the Ag Review portion of our program. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will be back in 30 seconds' time. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. We have light snow and minus 3 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at 1 o'clock. Feeder cattle prices were mixed across Saskatchewan this past week. Jace Fossen with the Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture has compiled the latest cattle market update.
Saskatchewan feeder cattle prices were mixed again for both steers and heifers on the February 3rd report. Feeder steer prices ranged from $332.33 per hundredweight for the 3 to 400 pound weight category to $234.19 per hundredweight for the 900 plus pound weight category. Prices on steers below 900 pounds were up, with only the 900 plus pound steers seeing a decline. The largest price increase was seen in the 3 to 400 pound weight category, which seen an increase of $10.08 per hundredweight to average the week at $332.33. Saskatchewan feeder heifer prices range from $258.38 per hundredweight for the 3 to 400 pound weight category to $211.71 per hundredweight for the 800 plus pound weight category. Those top and bottom weight categories just mentioned were down over the week. The largest price decline was seen in the 3 to 400 pound heifers, declining $4.29 per hundredweight, with the largest increase of $2.13 per hundredweight in the 5 to 600 pound weight category to average $248.30 over the week.
He outlines the key factors behind the price changes.
A low feed prices and higher contract values for the second half of 2023 are supporting feeder prices.
Fossen provides the latest marketing numbers.
Canfax reported Saskatchewan feeder cattle volumes at 14,068 head sold over the week, up from the 13,109 head sold the previous week. This is just below the 15,349 head marketed during the same week last year.
And as for market-ready cattle prices,
the Canfax price for Alberta fed steers reported on February 3rd was $191.61 per hundredweight. This was up $1.89 compared to the $189.72 per hundredweight reported on January 27th. Prices for Alberta cows compared to January 27th were up. The price of D2 slaughter cows increased 98 cents per hundredweight from the previous week to average $101.90. while the price of D3 cows was up very slightly to average $87.31 per hundredweight.
Jace Fossen compiled this week's cattle market update.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for April are trading at $163.80. That's up 20. June live cattle trading at $159.87. Up 7. March feeder cattle trading at $186.97, down 22. April feeder cattle trading at $191 even, down 35. April lean hogs trading at $84.12, up 85. May lean hogs trading at $93.50, also up 85. And that's the livestock market conditions. The East Central Research Foundation farm near Yorkton has participated in another study. Research coordinator Mike Hall says it was a project led by the Indian Head Agricultural Research Foundation, and it concluded in 2021. It looked at the efficacy of using struvite to supply the phosphorus needs of canola.
In 2020, we were one of four sites. The sites were Swift Current, Scott, Indian Head, and Yorkton. In 2021, the same four sites participated again, with additional trials being added at Melfort, Outlook, and Redvers. Now, let's go back to the field and discuss the properties of struvite and where it comes from.
Struvite is derived from wastewater. The product is 5% nitrogen, 28% P2O5, and 10% magnesium. According to promotional materials, it also has greater crop safety aspects to it as well. It's only 7.7 on the salinity index. MAP is 27 and MES-15 is 21. So there's definitely some greater crop safety there. Also, according to their publications, the product releases slowly. It's not water soluble. It's released slowly in response to organic acids that are being exuded by roots. I do like the idea of taking the phosphorus out of our wastewater. It seems like a very environmentally sound thing to do. Although environmental reasons weren't what the researchers originally had. They were just trying to get the phosphorus out of the wastewater so that the struvite didn't build up around their pump and fittings. But if we can have an environmental solution that creates an agronomically good product, that's a win-win situation. So let's have a look and see what kind of results we get.
The results from this study are combined over 10 site years. Yorkton 2020 wasn't included due to missing treatments. This figure shows the main effects to different pea formulations on canola emergence. Plant emergence was significantly higher for canola receiving seed placed struvite, as struvite is less toxic to germinating seed than MAP or S15. Emergence was significantly lower for canola receiving C-place S15, implying greater toxicity. Now, to be fair, S15 is also providing sulfur. While half the sulfur is in the elemental form, the other half is in the ammonium sulfate form, which is going to add toxicity to germinating seeds. However, if you combine ammonium sulfate with C-place MAP to provide the same level of S fertility as the S15, it would be even hotter on the seedlings. This is because all the added S would be in the ammonium sulfate form. So it would be better to put the extra ammonium sulfate in the sideband. However, if this is not possible and all your phosphorus and sulfur has to be seed placed, using S15 will have greater seed safety in this case. I should add that for all the treatment comparisons, nitrogen was balanced between treatments and supplemental ammonium sulfate in the sideband or as a broadcast application across the trials ensured sulfur was not limiting for any treatment. If we look at the individual treatment means, you can see increasing the rate of seedplace P2O5 from 25 to 65 kilograms per hectare significantly decreased canola emergence when MAP, S15, or a blend of MAP plus Crystal Green was used. The blend, by the way, was 50-50 by mass, which results in an actual P2O5 proportions of 35 to 65 from the Crystal Green and MAP. So once again, you can see the Crystal Green is pretty safe on crop emergence. Plant emergence is still above 40 plants per meter squared on average. This means yield is not being greatly reduced because of poor emergence. However, there isn't a lot of wiggle room left for some of the treatments, as you can see how further reductions by flea beetles, for example, would be problematic. Let's turn to the yield results. Here are the main effects for phosphorus formulation on canola yield. Crystal Green has increased yield numerically over the no phosphorus control, but its yield is statistically lower compared to MAP and S15. Crystal Green doesn't seem to be providing phosphorus to the crop as effectively as MAP or S15. University of Manitoba research found similar results and suggested the lower solubility of struvite in high pH soil may be the reason. In contrast, research by Katanda et al. In 2016 with wheat and canola found phosphorus use efficiencies from using struvite could match or exceed MAP. Growth chamber work by Jeff Shano at the University of Saskatchewan also found favorable results with struvite. This does not seem to be the case in our study. However, the blend of MAP and Crystal Green seems to have restored yield potential. S15 is purported to have better pea availability due to more feeding sites than MAP. In other words, more granules per foot of row containing phosphorus. The sulfur contained in each granule is also supposed to be reducing pH and helping to keep the phosphorus available. While S15 is numerically higher yielding in this study, the difference is not impressive or statistically significant. On another note, keep in mind that half the sulfur is elemental with S15 and may not be readily available in the year of application. This could result in sulfur shortages on land that is very low in sulfur. When looking at the individual treatments, the canola crop again looks less responsive to Crystal Green when it's applied alone. So how did this all work out economically? In this table, Chris has determined the price per kilogram of P2O5 from the different sources of phosphorus. To do this, he has subtracted the cost of nitrogen and sulfur for the various treatments. He has determined the cost for the different rates of phosphorus for each product. He subtracted these values from the gross revenue to determine the marginal profits per hectare. Fertilizer costs and prices for canola were based on retail quotes from February 3, 2022. When using MAP or S15, 45 kilograms of P2O5 per hectare was most profitable. To convert, multiply kilograms per hectare by 0.9 to determine the pounds per acre. Highest returns for the blend were actually at 65 kilograms of P2O5 per hectare. But take that with a grain of salt. If you compare against the zero phosphorus control, the profitability actually went down before maxing out at 65 kilograms per hectare. For the Crystal Green alone, adding no phosphorus was most profitable. From these results, the use of struvite is a hard sell. It is expensive and doesn't seem as readily available as ammonium phosphate. However, the goal with phosphorus fertility should be to build soil phosphorus up to about 15 parts per million. Yields can only be maximized if soil levels are maintained. On the off chance you haven't seen this old but classic study, here is wheat yield response to added phosphorus on soils with different levels of background phosphorus. It's not possible to seed place enough phosphorus on a soil testing 5 parts per million to match the yield from a soil testing 15 parts per million. This is because plants obtain a substantial portion of their P requirement from the entire soil volume that they occupy. In other words, crops respond to both P fertilizer and background P fertility. Perhaps struvite has a place in a blend to increase soil P without risking seed safety, particularly if the price of struvite would come down. Conclusions. Risk of seedling injury from seed place fertilizer is highest with S15 and lowest with struvite. Canola yield was less responsive to struvite, though, compared to MAP or S15. Struvite, particularly on low phosphorus soils with high pH, may not release quickly enough in the year of application to meet crop needs. Though there is some disagreement with this in the literature. Jeff Shano's growth chamber study comes to mind, for example. Struvite was less economical compared to MAP or S15. Perhaps extra struvite could be added to seed place MAP to help build up soil phosphorus levels without reducing crop emergence. However, sidebanding extra MAP would also achieve the same goal.
Mike Hall is the research coordinator at the East Central Research Foundation farm near Yorkton. Please stay tuned. Your commodities update is coming up next.
Commodities update.
Canola futures are trading down across the board this hour. March canola trading at $825.90, down $6.60. May canola trading at $824.60, down $5.60. March Minneapolis wheat trading at $9.26 per bushel. That's up 8¾ cents. March Kansas City wheat trading at $8.95¼, up 9½ cents. March Chicago wheat trading at $7.60½, up 10¾ cents. March corn trading at $6.77½, up 3½ cents. March soybeans trading at $15.17¼, that's up 2 cents. March oats trading at $3.87¾, up 3 cents. And that's the commodities update. Moving on to another story here, research conducted by the Prairie Swine Center has helped demonstrate the value of detailed farm records in helping determine the reasons for death loss of sows and removal of sows from the breeding herd. Dr. Jennifer Brown, a research scientist of ethology with the Prairie Swine Center, tells us what prompted their investigation.
Well, certainly sow mortality is obviously a concern for the Canadian pork industry, and then looking globally, we see, you know, in multiple studies that the mortality levels on farm have been increasing in the last 10 or 20 years, and we don't really have a lot of recent information on what's going on in Canada. Certainly, we've got some publications dating into the 1900s, but nothing in the more last 20 years or so. So we wanted to update this information and see what was the situation in Canada and compare this to some other countries. Certainly, some studies came out recently in the U.S. pointing to increase in the number of prolapse situations causing death loss. And certainly, as we're moving to group housing, there's some concerns about increases in lameness and removals of sows due to lameness. We wanted to, try and get a handle on what the situation was in Canada.
She outlines the types of questions that were asked of producers.
So we put together a survey of 40-some questions that we circulated through the provincial pork organizations across the country. And we were asking basically for basic farm information, a farrow to wean facility or a farrow to finish, the kinds of disease issues they might be facing, their feeding systems, information about diet and exposure to mycotoxins, And then, yeah, we asked some very specific questions about culling and death losses on farm. So, yeah, just trying to get a picture of what kind of removals and death losses they were having, and then the farm information to help us predict, you know, what was causing possibly the losses that they were seeing.
And as for the answers they received...
So as I say, we tried to get this survey circulated to all Canadian producers. You know, surveys are challenging. Surveys are run into a low response rate. But we did get over 150 responses from producers. But a large number, maybe 30% of those were not fully completed. So we ended up with just over 100 completed survey responses, and that's what we finally analyzed.
Brown says they also had some on-farm visits.
So yeah, once we completed the survey and had that basic information, we did some farm visits. So these happened specifically in Saskatchewan and Quebec. We were hoping to go across the country and look at some other provinces as well, but COVID was restricting travel at the time. We wanted to confirm the survey reports in terms of, had they accurately reported the herd size and the feeding systems and the mortality levels. We wanted to look into the records in a little bit more detail, so that complemented the survey responses.
She says there were a number of key findings.
I think we had some similar findings to some international reports and some U.S. reports. And a very common finding is that larger herds generally have higher mortality levels. And then a secondary finding is that, you know, when producers go to from stall housing to group gestation, there's an increase in mortality. And certainly, you know, that's part of the challenge of going to a new system. We're hoping to follow some of these farms over time and see if they can actually, you know, with improvements in management over time, reduce mortality levels. Another finding was that farm records, certainly it's very hard to study sow mortality. You can't actually just perform a study at somewhere like Prairie Swine Center. You actually need farm records from multiple herds to get a full understanding of it and kind of an epidemiological database. So another finding was that certainly we need to maintain and improve farm records in order to have a better understanding of what's going on, including performing necropsies on farm where it's possible or where there's some uncertainty about the causes of sows dying.
Brown says some of the information they've learned is quite significant.
Well, we certainly hope to go to some more producer meetings and emphasize the importance of good record keeping, because certainly as the Canadian sow herd is being transitioned from stalls to groups, there is some concern about the impact on sow mortality. And so if we can monitor these things and kind of identify what is the best practice for producers switching to group housing in terms of reducing mortality and minimizing lameness, I think that's going to be very beneficial to our whole herd. So part of that is keeping good records so we can identify what the actual mortality levels are, and distinguishing from culling for trying to maintain a parity distribution within a herd, as compared to sows that are euthanized on farm and what the reasons are for that, as compared to spontaneous death losses. So that information is all very important for understanding this situation, and if we could emphasize that to farm staff, then we would have better information going forward to improve our management.
And she says more information is available.
Certainly, yeah. Anyone who wants more information on, say, what the best practices for recording sow removals might be, can certainly contact me at Prairie Swine Center. My number is available there or by email. And certainly I'd love to work with producers on this problem.
Dr. Jennifer Brown is a research scientist of ethology with the Prairie Swine Center. Please stay tuned. Your agriculture weather is coming up next. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. It's now 1 o'clock. That means it's time to check the GX 94 precision weather forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today. 3 to 5 centimeters of snow, winds north-northeast at 15 to 30, and a high of 0. For tonight, a 60% chance of light snow, then clearing. Winds northwest at 20 to 35, a low of minus 12. For tomorrow, a mix of sun and cloud. Winds west-southwest at 10 to 20, a high of minus 6, a low of minus 11. For Friday, mainly sunny. Winds southwest at 15 to 25, a high of 0. For Saturday, mainly sunny, a high of minus 2, and Sunday, partly sunny, a high of minus 1. In the Paw, it's minus 5 degrees, Swan River and Roblin, minus 2, Dauphin, 0, Brandon and Shoal Lake Russell, minus 1. Regina and Broadview Mooseman are at plus 1, Saskatoon, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, minus 3, Hudson Bay, Indian Head, minus 2. The Yorkton-Melville region has some light snow, a north wind at 8 kilometers an hour. 92% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 3 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 6 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX on Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.